Hello, everybody. Welcome to Brokenness to Faith podcast. This is episode 7. My name is Noah. Today is going to be just me. If everything goes as planned, then that means Marky's solo episode has already come out. So if you're listening to this, then you already hopefully have an idea of what we're doing. Each of us are going to take one episode just on our own to talk about whatever we feel like talking about. Just going to be us. So yeah, so today you have me. This is episode 7. Today I decided that I want to talk about doubt for my episode. And the reason was when I thought about, you know, when Marky suggested the idea and I thought about what do I want to talk about, the one thing that came to my mind was doubt, because it's something that I always, I guess, liked to talk about because it's a very important issue in the church today. A lot of people, a lot of Christians struggle with doubt. A lot of people have, you know, questions, they have things they're not sure about, and it can really take a toll on us if we don't deal with it. So I wanted to talk a little bit today about doubt, just a brief, you know, what is it, what types of doubt are there, you know, how common is it, and maybe give a little bit of, you know, what to do for you so you can, you know, maybe start to work on that. So yeah, so that's going to be the topic of today. Another reason I like talking about doubt is because I feel like within the church, there's a stigma towards it. You know, there's like this idea around doubt that if you're a professing Christian and you doubt that it you know, it's not good. You know, we all think of, when we think of doubt, we think of doubting Thomas, right, in the story where he's told that Jesus has come back to life and he says, "I don't believe it." And he says, "I want to see the wounds for myself. I want to, you know, put my finger in the nail wounds myself." And eventually, you know, Jesus does appear to him, and Thomas is able to do that. And he says, "Okay, now I believe." And we as Christians give Thomas a very, very hard time. And, you know, even just the name, we call him Doubting Thomas, you know, rather than just calling him Thomas. Because there's a stigma that doubting is just so terrible and so evil that we just can't do it, and we have to avoid it at all costs. And if you are doubting, then that's something that you need to keep quiet and, you know, not tell anybody. So that's part of the reason I want to talk about today is, you know, maybe this will encourage you, if you are struggling with some doubts, to speak up about it, to seek help and start doing the things that maybe you can do to challenge that and grapple with that. So before I get into it, I want to talk a little bit about what is doubt. The Greek word that is often used in the New Testament is, let's see if I get this right, distazo. It means going two ways or shifting between positions. And that's a good definition of what doubt is. You're shifting between two positions. Maybe one position is trusting God and the other position is taking matters into your own hand, right? You know, maybe, I don't know, whatever it is, you're shifting between these two positions. You're going one way, then you're going the other way. And then, you know, you haven't quite committed to any one way or the other, right? That's why a lot of Christians will still come to church even if they have some doubts, even if they don't fully believe, because they haven't committed to one way or the other, right? And that's kind of what doubt is. So that being said, what are some occasions where we might find ourselves doubting? It's important to understand before we can even begin this conversation is to know what happens, you know, what situations can we find ourselves doubting. One situation is when we're faced with a seemingly impossible challenge or request. Take, for example, the story of Gideon. You know, Gideon is this small little guy. He's, you know, working in the farms. And this was during a time when the Israelites were very heavily oppressed. And God comes to him and says, "Hey, Gideon, I want you to be this, you know, hero, if you will, who's going to save your people." And Gideon's like, "Really, me? I'm this tiny little guy. I can't do this," right? He lacked confidence in God because God was putting in front of him this seemingly impossible challenge. So Gideon naturally doubted God because this seemingly impossible challenge in front of him. And that might be a situation you're in. You feel like God has put this massive calling in your life, or you feel like even if it has nothing to do with God's calling, there's just something in front of you that seems impossible and you're not sure if you can handle it. You're going to start to have doubts whether God's going to come through, whether God's going to, you'll be able to provide what the strength that you need. You're going to lose that confidence. You're going to lose that, you know, trust in God when you're facing these seemingly impossible challenges. The other time that we often doubt is when we, you know, we have to believe what we cannot see, right? Again, I mentioned Thomas. You know, he had a hard time believing that Jesus Christ had come back from the dead when he couldn't see it, right? It wasn't until he had a chance to actually see Jesus Christ that those doubts were alleviated. And I think this is the most common is, you know, we're asked as Christians to believe a lot of things that naturally we just can't see. We can't see God, right? We can see the workings of God. We can see the, you know, effects of God in people's lives, but you can't actually see him in the physical being. And it can make it very hard sometimes for us to have that strong faith when we can't see it. And this also goes to the promises of God, right? If, you know, you read the Bible and there's some promise there, it can be hard sometimes to trust that because it's a promise. It's something that's going to happen in the future. You can't see it or see what's happening in the workings of that promise, right? And so it can make it very hard to not have those doubts when we're asked to believe so much that we just cannot see. And I'll get to that later on how to fight that. But these are the main two types of doubting that I think happens is we're asked to believe something we cannot see, or we're faced with something that seems impossible, some impossible challenge. And those are obviously things that are going to cause some shifting between positions. You're not going to be, you know, really confident in running towards this impossible challenge if you don't think you can beat it, right? You're going to want to go the other way. You're going to want to take the path of least resistance, the easiest path. And that's kind of what doubt is do I keep going down this tricky path that might be kind of hard regardless of the reward, or do I go down the easier path? And it's very easy for us as Christians to fall into this, especially when, you know, things maybe don't work out, especially if you are praying and you're not receiving answers, or, you know, whatever the case is. It can be very, very hard sometimes as Christians to not have doubt. So before we move on, I want to, you know, look at some statistics. There was a study I found online by Barna, a fairly popular research group among Christian community, and they had this entire study done on doubt. And we're going to look back to this study throughout the podcast, because they have a lot of incredible numbers and just in very, very insightful stuff. So they did the study amongst self-identifying Christians, which people who kind of say they're Christian but probably don't go to church a whole lot. You know, they just check the box Christian and that's about it. And then the more devout practicing Christians who actually go to church regularly, who, you know, probably pray regularly, read their Bible regularly, right? And so those were the two main groups that this study was being done by. So for self-identifying Christians, those who simply check the box, 26% said that they still experienced doubt at some point, or in that moment, they were experiencing doubts. 40% said that they have, you know, worked through doubts at some point, that they have experienced doubt in the past and have worked through it, and 35% say they have never experienced doubt. You know, fairly high numbers across the board. The one we want to focus on is the 26% who said they were experiencing doubts, right? Of all these self-identifying Christians, a quarter of them were experiencing doubt. And it's not surprising because these are people who aren't in church a whole lot. They probably go maybe once a month, if that. You know, they probably don't read their Bible that often. So it's not surprising that there's a fairly large number of them who are not sure, who are struggling with doubts of some kind. Amongst practicing Christians, you know, Christians who were probably regularly at church and whatnot, 19% said that they were experiencing doubt in that moment, and 42% said that they have worked through it. So obviously, you know, Christians who are in church, who are practicing, you know, they're going to experience doubt a little less, but it's still there, still almost 20%. And the reason I wanted to share these numbers to start off is that doubt, like I said at the beginning, is a fairly common problem in the church. And if you're not one of those 20 or, you know, so people who are experiencing it, then you're probably one of the 40% who has experienced it in the past and have worked their way through it. And this isn't including people who have not worked through that doubt, and we'll talk about that a little later. But my point is that, you know, there's two people right now that I want to speak to, and that's the people who are experiencing doubt and those who maybe aren't experiencing doubt, who have either worked through it or have yet to experience it. And, you know, my point is that it's a very common issue. You know, if you're one of those people who are saying, you know, I have some doubts, I'm not sure if God's going to follow through on this promise, or I don't know if God's even real, you know, then I want you to know that you're not alone, because not only is there probably a few other people in your church who are doubting, but there's probably twice as many people who have had doubts before and have worked through it, right? You know, even your pastors maybe, who you think of as, you know, these, you know, they are great people, but they probably experienced doubts at some point. And maybe you can talk to them and say, hey, I'm experiencing something. But my point is that this is not a single issue. This is not something that just one person in the church is dealing with, you know. And I want to stress that because there is so much stigma around it. You know, it reminds me a lot of, like, porn in the church. You know, I think, I forget the number, but it's like half of men in church are actively struggling with pornography, but we still stigmatize the issue as something that, you know, is not that common. And if you're dealing with it, then that's something you do on your own. You deal with it on your own. And I think we look at the doubt in the same way. We stigmatize it. We make it a big deal that if you're doubting, then there's something wrong with you as a Christian. And that's just not the case. It's a common thing that people deal with. And I really want to stress that, that this is something that is common. So that being said, what happens when we doubt? You know, this is probably pretty obvious for most people. James chapter 1, verse 6 through 9 says, "But let him ask in faith with no doubting, for he who doubts is like a wave of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. For let not that man suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is double-minded, unstable in all his ways." So James says that the man who doubts is unstable, you know, and double-minded, basically meaning that he's prone to falling away. And this is what I talked about earlier, that the Greek word for doubt means you're shifting between positions. So when you're doubting, naturally, one of two things are going to happen. Either you stick to your belief and you stick to your faith, or you're going to go down the other position, which is unbelief, which is falling away. And that's basically the natural outcome of doubt. Either you conquer it or you don't, and you fall away. You know, and in that time where you're shifting between positions, it's not going to be good, because you're going to get, you know, the worst parts of both. You know, you're going to get all of the effort of going to church and praying and reading your Bible with none of the benefits of it, none of the results. And you're going to be, you know, dealing with all of the hardships of the world because you're flirting with it without actually being in it. And it's not a good place to be, you know. And like I said, so ultimately what happens when we doubt, either we conquer it or we fall away. And this is why I really want to stress it's important to deal with it, because we don't want to fall away. We don't want to walk away. You know, we want to keep walking this, you know, this walk of faith. And if we allow doubts to be present and to grow, then we're not going to finish that walk, you know. So that being said, how do we respond to doubt? You know, this is very, very important. We're going to look back to the Barna study right now, because one of the questions they asked was, when facing doubt, ... you know, and then they gave them a bunch of options of what they would do. So make sure I got there. Yeah. So amongst the people that they asked, 45% said that when they were facing doubt, they stopped attending church. 45%. You know, I mean, it's crazy. You know, that even something as simple as, I don't really know if God's going to give me this job, could be enough to cause someone to walk away from church. 29% said they stopped reading the Bible. Another 29% said that they stopped praying. 25% said they stopped talking to friends or family of the faith. So it's clear that for most people, when they experience doubt, the common response is to just shut down their faith, basically. And it's not the right way to go. In a minute, we'll look at the right ways to deal with doubt, the right ways to move past it. But oftentimes, people's response, like I said, is to just walk away, you know. And it's tough. It's really tough, because, you know, you understand, you know, I've been in a position where I've had extreme doubts before. And I felt like, man, I just want to give up. I just don't want to deal with this anymore, because I have all these questions and I can't seem to find answers. And it can be tough. And our first thought is to just stop reading, stop praying, stop talking to friends, or even worse, leave the church. And I want to say that that is obviously not the right way to handle it, but it's only going to make your life harder and more difficult than it needs to be. So now I want to spend the majority of my time talking about how to move past doubt, right? The importance of it, how to do it, and this is where I really want to spend the time. And in a minute, I'll talk about, you know, I'll focus a little bit on people who aren't doubting, who have already gone through it, but if you're experiencing doubts, this is where I really want to get to, is how to deal with that? How to move past that? How to, you know, how do we as Christians take that doubt and handle it, especially with all the stigma, especially with all the negative thoughts around doubt, right? So there's a few different things that we can look at. The first I want to look at is the evidence that supports the truth of God in the Bible, and then we'll look at some statistics. So in the past, I've given messages to the youth and young adults on doubt, and one of the biggest things that I always try to do is give evidence, because, you know, our faith as believers is something that is based off of faith. It's something that is based off of, you know, our hearts and our emotions and things like that. And it's not necessarily an intellectual faith, if you will. But I believe that having the intellectual side of things can be very important, right? You know, and what I mean by that is, if you're trying to evangelize to somebody, you're not going to sit there and open up your book of notes and start saying, okay, this is this evidence, and here's this evidence, and this is how we can prove God. You're not going to want to go that route. You're going to go the route of maybe sharing a testimony or things like that. And because the problem is if you build your faith off of intelligence, then I feel it's going to fall apart. You're going to lack the spiritual side of things. But that doesn't mean that it's not important to have the intellectual foundations, if you know what I mean. So briefly, I'll look at some things. I want to save the bulk of this for the end of the podcast, but there's three categories of evidence I think that we can look at that can really bolster your faith if you're somebody who is struggling. The first is through the Bible itself, mainly like the prophecies, for example. You know, there's hundreds and hundreds of prophecies in the Old Testament that, you know, later on in the Bible came true, you know, and now that we have better ways of dating the Bible and dating the various books that we've found over time, we can see that, you know, Isaiah was written when he said it was written prior to a lot of his prophecies coming true. And, you know, it's phenomenal. And I encourage you, if you haven't taken the time, you know, to look at, you could probably find many websites. I know a lot of study Bibles will oftentimes have charts where they'll show you where the prophecy happened, right, where it was prophesied, and then they'll give you the verse where it came true. And it's just incredible. Even now, as we're in the, you know, the end times and all that, we're still seeing prophecies about the end times coming true all around us, and it's just incredible. You know, I mean, no other book has had such a such an impressive track record of prophecies coming true. And so, you know, that on its own, I think, is a phenomenal piece of evidence to give weight to the Bible. Another obviously big category of evidence is testimony. You know, just the other day, we heard a phenomenal testimony at our church picnic. You know, all the time we're hearing testimonies. And if you're somebody who has some severe doubts, and maybe you don't have a testimony of your own to fall back on, I encourage you, find, you know, your pastor, your elders, somebody in the church who's maybe a bit older, who has experienced, you know, a lot of what God can do. And I'm sure they have some incredible stories to share. You know, I've heard some incredible testimonies, and it's one of the hardest things to debunk because it's the personal experience. You know, it's somebody's personal experience that you can't just discredit, you know. And so it's just incredible. And it's one of the greatest assets I think we as Christians have when it comes to proving our faith is the testimony. And I think that if you're somebody who has some doubts, whatever it is, whether you're doubting the very existence of God or simply doubting whether he'll help you in a situation, there is probably a testimony somewhere that someone can share that will speak to the situation you're in, you know? And it's just incredible. And the third category is, I guess I just call it the scientific evidence, right? And like I said, I'll touch a little bit about this at the end. But I just want to real quick, there's a quote that I really love. I have it written down by Lord William Kelvin. He was a famous scientist. He did a lot of work on thermodynamics. He came up with the concept of absolute zero. And obviously the Kelvin temperature scale was based on his work, you know, William Kelvin, Kelvin temperature scale. So this guy was very prominent in the scientific community, right? Very well known. You probably have never heard any of his work, but I guarantee you his work has somehow impacted your life. but he has this phenomenal quote where he says, "I believe that the more thoroughly science is studied, the further it takes us from anything comparable to atheism. If you study science deep enough and long enough, it'll force you to believe in God." Right? And so I had the same belief. I think the more you look into archaeology, science, you know, biology, all this stuff, the more it kind of points you to God. Even the two guys who discovered DNA, whose names I can't remember, one of them was so amazed at the structure of DNA that he believed it was designed by aliens. You know, he thought, this was back in the 40s or whatever, and he thought like the aliens had made DNA because it was just so incredibly complex that he could not imagine it was done by natural process, you know? And it's just incredible. When you look at all that science has to offer, it's hard to say that there is no God, or that, you know, God isn't, or the Bible isn't real. And again, I'll touch on this a little bit later. So that's the first thing I want to say, is that there's so much evidence out there through the biblical, testimonial, scientific. There's evidence out there. If you're struggling with doubts, there is evidence there. And the importance of this, I think, is that it grounds you. It kind of almost kind of forces you to stay in church. And this is a similar situation to what I was in, you know, in my life was, you know, I would have doubts, and there were times where I maybe couldn't find an answer to a question I would have, but I would stay in church. And because even though I had a question I couldn't answer, I had already learned so much about the Bible and so much about God that I couldn't discount it. You know, I couldn't walk away from church in good conscience because of so much that I had learned and so much that I had known. You know, it just wouldn't work, because even though I had doubts, it couldn't remove the truth that I had already known, if that makes sense. So I think this stuff is important because, you know, if you're in a situation where you're experiencing some extreme doubts, it's going to be hard to walk away if you have this strong foundation of evidence and you know, things like that to kind of force yourself to stay in church, if that makes sense. You know, and so I think that's what's important about this stuff. Is in the future, having this knowledge, it makes it harder to walk away. And if you're somebody who isn't experiencing doubts, if you're somebody who has maybe already conquered your doubts or haven't experienced it yet, I encourage you to look at the evidence that's out there. Start building this foundation, you know, of evidence, whether it be testimonial, biblical, or scientific, so that way in the future, if maybe you start to doubt, or if somebody comes to you with doubts, you have this foundation that you can spring off of, right? Something that you can now work off of and say, hey, I have some doubts about this, but I know the Bible is 100% true already. And it makes it a lot easier to deal with those things in the future if you have that strong foundation. So that being said, I want to go back to our study by Barna. They had a follow-up question. And they said, in terms of seeking help, where did you go, right? Where did you go for help? Amongst self-identifying Christians, those who simply checkmarked the box, 40% said they went to friends or family, 29% said they went to the Bible, 22% said they went to church, 19% said they went to a spouse, 18% said they went to a pastor or a spiritual leader, 15% said they went to other books, other religious books, and about 12% said they went online. Now, two numbers jump out at me right away. First is that 18% went to a pastor or some other spiritual leader. Now, this is just among self-identifying Christians, might not be regular church attenders, but that strikes me. And the first thing that comes to my mind is the stigma of doubt, is this idea that it's not okay to doubt and be a Christian. So for somebody who maybe goes to church once a month, you know, maybe less than that, doesn't really read their Bible, they're going to experience doubt. And for them to not want to go to a pastor is just incredible, because that's the first place I would say to go to, as a pastor or some elders in the church, people who have knowledge, have testimony, have experienced the same things, and can give you some guidance, can give you some help, or can maybe point you to somebody who can kind of give you the help. And the fact that only 18% said they went to a pastor just, to me, shows that there is this stigma. But the other thing that struck me was 40%, you know, this was the highest category, said they went to friends or family. And this is where I want to stop for a moment and speak to the people listening who say, I don't have any doubts. Or maybe they've already worked their way through those doubts. because odds are you could be one of those friends or family, right? If you have somebody, a friend or family member who's in the church and is doubting, there's a very high chance that you're going to be the person they go to, that you're going to be the one that they go to for help. And this is why I think it's so important that if you're not struggling with doubts, that you are not only building up this, you know, foundation, but that you're removing any stigmas that you might have. Because if somebody comes to you for help and you turn them away because you think it's just flat out wrong to doubt, or you don't have the proper, you know, abilities to answer their questions, then, you know, they could become one of those 40-some percent of people who walk away from church. And it's a lot of pressure, but it's important that we realize that we are in that role as believers. You know, I don't remember exactly where it is in the Bible, but Paul, I think he's talking to Timothy, says that, you know, we need to be equipped at any moment to defend our faith. And, you know, it might be a little bit out of context, but I think that is speaking to this idea that anytime somebody can come up to you and say, hey, I don't really believe in God, or I don't, especially if they're a believer, and say, I don't really know if God's going to follow through on this promise, or I don't really know if God's going to do this, or I don't know. And it's important that we are prepared and equipped to answer those questions. Maybe if you don't have a testimony of your own, you can maybe have somebody else's testimony ready to go. You know, and I believe we all have a testimony. So anyways, maybe you have some you know, biblical prophecies that you memorize that you can just kind of give out real quick. Whatever it is, it's important that we are equipped to handle those people who are coming to us for help, especially if they're not regular attenders, especially if they're not, you know, devout practicing Christians, if they're just self-identifying Christians. It's important that we take those opportunities to answer their questions. You know, and in a minute we'll talk about why that's such a big deal. Amongst devout Christians, devout practicing Christians, 50% said they turned to the Bible when they had doubts, 42% said they turned to church, and 32% said they turned to a pastor. So obviously, those numbers jump way up amongst devout practicing Christians, and I think it just goes to show that they realize the importance of turning to the Bible, to church, or to pastor, whereas the non-believers, or not necessarily non-believers, but the self-identifying Christians, their first place to go to is friends and family, you know, because they're probably the people they feel most comfortable with. Again, there's a stigma about doubt. So you're going to go to the person that you feel is going to least judge you, the person who's going to be the most open to your situation, you know, and that's going to be friends and family. So all that being said, you know, I'm going to finally get to some closing here. I want to leave you guys off with sort of some support, I guess. I don't know really how to say it, but there's two big things I want to talk about here. And first is what happens as believers when we face doubt and we work our way through it. And C.S. Lewis, he's the author of the Narnia series, a well-known Christian. He has this quote that I really, really love, and it really kind of sums up the idea of Christians facing doubt. He says, "If ours is an examined faith, we should be unafraid to doubt. If doubt is eventually justified, we were believing what clearly was not worth believing." And I'll take a break here. What he means is, you know, if you doubt something, right? If somebody says, "I'll be there at 6 o'clock," and you don't really think it's going to happen, and they show up late, right? That just confirms that your doubt was correct. And he says that, therefore, what we were believing was clearly not worth believing, if that doubt is shown to be true. But C.S. Lewis goes on, and he says, "But if doubt is answered, our faith has grown stronger. It knows God more certainly, and it can enjoy God more deeply." And this, I think, is the key importance of doubt, right? The reason we as Christians should almost embrace the questions and the doubt that we have. Because C.S. Lewis puts it perfectly. He says, "If the doubt is answered, our faith has grown stronger," right? And I'll tell you, I have never in my, you know, 12, 13, 14 years of being a born-again Christian, have never had a question that I couldn't find an answer to, right? I've never had any question about anything in the Bible, anything about God, anything about the world around us that I haven't found an answer to. And in all of that, my faith has become so much stronger. You know, I still have doubts, I still have questions, but as I mentioned before, it's almost impossible for me to imagine leaving the church because of a doubt, because of all this strength that my faith has already had, you know? And I believe that this is incredibly true, that if our doubt is answered, then our faith becomes only stronger, because it shows that what we were believing is not only true, but now we have less questions, we have less doubts, so our faith can become stronger. Back to the Barna study, this was the last question of their study, was after you came out of that doubt, you know, was your faith stronger after it? And amongst practicing Christians, 87% said their faith was stronger after they had experienced doubt and worked through it. Amongst the self-identifying Christians, 81%. So clearly, there is a connection between facing doubt and overcoming it and your faith becoming stronger for it. And I guarantee you, anybody listening who has experienced doubts and have worked through it would say the same thing. They would say that, yes, I have felt like my faith is now stronger as a result. And this is the important thing, is when you get through that doubt, when you get through to the other side, your faith will be better for it. Not only will you have less doubt, but you might even be closer to God because you learned something new. Maybe you experienced God in some new way, right? And this is incredibly important. And so I want to close by touching on two very important things. And basically, they're two things that can be as pieces of evidence, things that can be that we can use to strengthen our faith, strengthen our you know, I guess, intelligence of the faith, if you will, and things that can be used to crush our doubts. So if you're somebody who is experiencing doubts, and even if you're somebody who isn't experiencing doubts, I want you to pay attention to these next few things that I talk about, because I think these are just scratching the surface. These are just the tip of the iceberg, if you will. But I think they're incredibly powerful things. The first is, there's this author named Ivan Panin. And I encourage you, no matter what situation you're in, no matter how old or new your faith is, doubts or no doubts, I encourage everybody to get his books. Ivan Panin, that's I-V-A-N-P-A-N-I-N. Ivan Panin, he's a Russian guy. Back in the 1800s, he basically took the Greek and the Hebrew Bibles and he just tore them apart. He just studied every word, every letter. And I'm not going to spoil it, but he found some incredible things. So if you go on Amazon, you can find, if you type in his name, the book is called Mathematics Prove the Bible. And I think that there says enough. I've read the book. It's absolutely incredible. And I encourage every one of you guys, everyone listening, to get this book. You know, this isn't sponsored. This isn't, I don't get any money for it. It's just an incredible book. And it really, even if you're not doubting, it really will blow your mind. You know, it'll, you know, in a good way, it'll completely shatter your perception of the Bible, you know, and build it again incredibly different. You know, it's a phenomenal book. He has some other books that are good, but that's the one I want you to read, is Mathematics Prove the Scriptures, I think is what the official name is. Incredible book. If you happen to get the book and you read it, let me know what you think. You know, send me an email or a text or whatever. Let me know what you think of it, because it's an incredible book, and it really will, it'll answer a lot of questions you probably didn't think you had about the Bible and whatnot. So that's that. But the other thing I want to just say, just as a final strengthening of your faith, a final kind of, you know, party message, is the city of Jericho. We all familiar with the story of Exodus and the story of that whole journey out of Egypt. And the Exodus, at least in the event of Exodus, ends with the conquering of Jericho, basically. It was the first city on the path of conquering the Promised Land. And for most of modern human history, up until, you know, the 1900s, 1950s, I believe, most of archaeology did not believe this city existed. They didn't think it was real. They didn't think it existed at all, right? And they thought that the Bible, the biblical account of Jericho, was just made up, was fictional, and never happened. And then in the 1950s, some archaeologists discovered the city of Jericho, exactly where it should be, as described. And that on itself was, okay, that's pretty cool, right? We have the city, we have the archaeological evidence, we know the city exists. But that wasn't all. The archaeologists kept digging, and they kept finding more and more incredible stuff. So I'll just briefly go over what they found, how it lines up to the Bible, and I want that to kind of be the closing thoughts that you guys take with you. It's just the tip of the iceberg, just something to kind of give you a little boost of strength, you know, and then you can go on and look up more on your own. So what the archaeologists found was, first and foremost, that the walls had collapsed and that they collapsed outward, right? And so they believed it was done by an earthquake, and we'll touch on that a little bit later. So the walls had fallen, and they fell outward, which that lines up with the Bible, right? The Bible says the walls had fallen outward, and they created sort of a natural slope into the city. The second thing archaeologists found was that the city was burned, right? That also lines up with the Bible, and, you know, there's some debate whether it was natural or not, but it lines up with the Bible nonetheless. The few other things that were interesting was they found that all of the city was filled with pots and, you know, jars filled with grain, right? Suggesting that the city had just experienced harvest. And when you read the biblical account, it tells us that, you know, the siege of Jericho happened shortly after the harvest. So that lines up. You know, there's a few other little things here and there. But the one thing that is really quite striking is what they found along the north side. So in the story of Jericho, the Israelites send in two spies into the city, and there's this lady, her name is Rahab. She gives them shelter in her house. And her house was special because it was along the north wall. And there was a window in her wall attached to the wall of the city that led outside the city. So the spies were given shelter, and then they could escape through this window outside the city. And before they left, they promised Rahab that whatever happens, God will protect you and your house. So they left, you know, the events take place, and then that's that. But archaeologists found something quite striking. Along the north wall, the north section of the wall, they found a piece of the wall that was still standing. And attached to that wall was a house, and the house was still standing. Both the wall and the house were not only unaffected by the earthquake that they said destroyed the rest of the wall, but both were still unaffected by the fire that had occurred afterwards. Incredible. I mean, this, by all, you know, logical conclusions, was the house of Rahab. And no earthquake is selective, right? If there was an earthquake, it would have torn down that section of the wall too. And if there was a fire, it wouldn't have stopped there. There's no logical explanation for why this section of the wall would still be standing. And it's just incredible. And that's only a piece of it. If you want more, there's a phenomenal documentary called Patterns of Evidence, Exodus, that talks about the entire Exodus from the arrival of Joseph all the way up to Jericho. And phenomenal documentary, but this is just a little something, just a little tidbit to kind of, you know, keep you going, if you will. But it's just incredible. And there's so much more out there, like the archaeological evidence of Jericho, like the works of Ivan Panin, which, again, I encourage you to read his books. It's just incredible. There's no end to the evidence that's out there to prove the reality of the Bible, to prove the existence of God. And it's just incredible. That's all I can really say. It's incredible. So if you're somebody who's experiencing doubts, my closing statements to you is, one, don't be afraid to go to your pastor. Don't be afraid to tell people. You know, we need to, as Christians, remove the stigma around doubt. We need to acknowledge that doubt exists. Doubt happens. People have questions, you know, and that's just a sign that your brain is working, right? It's normal for us to come up with questions, ask questions about things, and it's also important that we find answers to those questions that we have. So if you're a Christian who is experiencing some doubts, you know, don't be afraid to speak up. Don't be afraid to seek help, to talk to people about it, to find pieces of evidence, like whether it be Panin's books or documentaries or articles, whatever it is, you know, don't be afraid to look for answers. Because like I said, I've never had a question that was not answered. You know, and I doubt the same will be, you know, not true for everyone else. You know, I don't think there's a question out there that can't be answered. And if you're somebody listening today who has no doubts or have already experienced it and moved past them, I encourage you to be open, be willing to hear people who have these issues, and prepare yourself so that you can, you know, adequately handle their doubts as well as your own doubts in the future, because I guarantee you, if you're not experiencing doubts now, you will in the future, right? So all that being said, I just want this podcast to be a source of encouragement, you know, to remove the stigma, help you to face up to those doubts that you have and not be afraid to seek the help, because, you know, we don't want anybody to walk away simply because they couldn't find an answer to a question that's probably out there. You know, there's answers to these questions you're having, and the first step is to find people who can maybe help you answer it. So all that being said, you can find our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, if you want to listen to some more. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you can email us at brokennessthefaith@gmail.com. Find us on Instagram. Don't be afraid to reach out to us if you have a question about something, right? If you don't feel comfortable talking to somebody you know, you can address that to us, right? And we'll answer that question either directly or on a future podcast. So don't be afraid to ask questions to us or to anybody else. So with all that being said, thank you for joining me on this little different episode. So thank you for that, and we'll see you guys in the next one.